This is KWAI Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Time for the Carol Cox Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Good morning. Welcome to the Carol Cox Show. And thanks for joining us here. 524-1080 is the number. 524-1080 is the phone number if you'd like to call in. And we're going to be talking about the Jones Act. And when I say we, I have Mr. J. Lawrence Friedheim, who is a Admiralty Advocate and is with Admiralty Advocates. Mr. Friedheim has great knowledge and extensive knowledge, I should say, on on Adam Archila Law and the Jones Act. And when we talk about the Jones Act, so that we're all on the same sheet, it's the Merchant Marine Act of 1920. So we'll talk about that, and we hear a lot of chatter in the air about how we should lift it here in Hawaii, and it's impacting the economy and all those things. And so I want to give a different side of the, because all that I've been hearing is how and why we should change it. And hopefully we can learn something and from the other side and the other views and people that are more have expertise. Because for myself, I just know how to keep the boat floating by using a good bilge pump and a bucket. So that's about my extent of knowledge of seamanship. So anyway, Jay, thank you, and good morning. Thanks for joining me.
Oh, it's an honor and privilege to be here.
So if you could, give us a little bit about yourself and background, and so that when they call me up, I can say, well, you heard the man speak.
Well, my name is Jay Friedheim, and I practice admiralty and maritime law, and I've done that here in Honolulu for 26 years now. I came here from Nolens, where I went to school at Tulane, and Tulane is generally considered to be the world's leading admiralty and maritime law school. And I not only learned about the kind of work that I did here, I learned a lot about the historical development of admiralty and maritime law. It's a very fascinating area of law that has a rich history that goes back literally thousands of years. I mean, there's biblical references to Issachar going down and working in ships, and while his brother supported him. And maybe there's a lesson from the Bible in how possibly we might be able to figure out how to relieve the difficulties that we experience. When I was in school at Tulane and studying the Jones Act, the shipping component was not a priority concern. The biggest portion, you have to put this into context. Here you hear about the Jones Act, you think that the only thing that the Jones Act did was it created a burden on individuals who want to engage in marine cargo transportation. It's vast. It's a huge tapestry. It's gigantic. And it doesn't only start in like 1910 when Mr. Jones tried to codify it. Really, much of the Jones Act is a rehash of 50-year earlier legislation and 100-year earlier legislation going back to the creation of the United States of America. The first laws that were created amongst those were laws regarding cabotage. When you talk about the Jones Act, you're really missing the point. And a lot of the chatter in the air that you hear, it's just that. It's just chatter. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the bigger picture and you understand the reason why nations have cabotage laws, you realize that those that are complaining are literally the outliers. Let's put this into context. What cabotage laws do is require the vessels that ply the coastwise trade have an affiliation with the nation that they're serving, a direct affiliation. A nation has a right to control its borders and the territories of its seas immediately surrounding those borders. Historically, before we had cargo ships of the size that we had individuals who put up the money to do a voyage, and when they went into a port, they had to know that there was going to be a uniform treatment of those ships, or they just wouldn't show up at your port. And you can imagine what will happen to your economy if you have no way to get things out of here except by mules or wagons or on the backs of people. Mm-hmm. So ships which can carry vast amounts of cargo immediately became important for national security, national economic concerns, national, the economic concerns include a lot, not only the current earnings, but the future earnings. Industries develop because they can move their cargoes. Mm-hmm. So that's the aspect of the Jones Act that you hear people talking about, mostly in bumper sticker language. If you look at America as this very large concern of states, there are only three places in America, two states, that are even adversely affected by the Jones Act at all. And those are the non-contiguous states.
Mm-hmm.
Hawaii, Alaska, and Puerto Rico, which is a commonwealth but still is regulated under our rules regarding the Jones Act. Everybody else in America wants the Jones Act, and they want it for a lot of very good reasons, for the importance of the country. Let's go a little more of the historical context. Cabotage rules are the laws that say who can come into your port and go to another port in your country without first leaving. Every foreign vessel is allowed, well, I guess there may be some limitations due to national security, but virtually every cargo ship in the world can come into your port and bring cargo and pick up cargo and leave. If they go to another place, that a foreign country, another port, they can come back to your port. The coastwise trade controls a vessel going from one port in the United States, let's say Los Angeles, and then going at Long Beach, and then going up to San Francisco, or going up to Seattle, before it went to either Vancouver or somewhere Ensenada in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
So there are ways around the Jones Act. The limitation on the coastwise trade is just one portion of the Jones Act. It also requires that vessels that ply the coastwise trade are American bottoms. The top down on this, the first part is, which way is the top down? It has to be owned by American citizens. It has to be, the majority interests have to be controlled by Americans that are subject directly to American law and authority. There's ways that there are attempts to get around that in the shipping industry with foreign flag vessels. You have a lot of vessels from Korea and from China and from Japan where a lot of vessels are being built. But very often the flag that those ships fly under are what's called flag of convenience. It's like in America, large corporations want to be Delaware corporations because Delaware has ironed out the laws relating to corporate control and corporate activity very clearly. And you understand what's going to happen, and the courts are prepared to deal with those problems. The requirement that it be an American bottom not only requires that it be owned by Americans, it has to be built in America.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the issues. Foreign countries like Korea have national priorities that include their shipping industry. One of the reasons that the ships are cheaper in Korea is because the Korean government is subsidizing the creation of these vessels to a very high degree. So it has to be an American-built bottom. It has to be repaired at American shipyards. Now, those two requirements make it possible for America to have a healthy shipbuilding industry. That has not maintained. We have issues because our shipbuilding industry is not building the kinds of ships that it once did. It's primarily building military ships. Passenger ships and cargo ships are all too often being built in foreign countries where the expertise and specialty to produce those is higher, and it's being subsidized, and so the end product is maybe a less expensive vessel. So there's ownership, there's building, there's repairing, and there's also, under the Jones Act, a requirement that it be manned by American citizens. You want the captain American, you want the crew members to be American citizens, and the ultimate result of this is that America controls America's shipping, which is what is responsible for bringing goods in and out of ports. Now, like I said, when it was just the contiguous 48 states, nobody was talking about the Jones Act being such a terrible burden on shipping.
Mm-hmm.
The argument made by those people who like to go around and say, end the Jones Act, we're not getting rid of cabotage laws. There's a reason for that. The cabotage laws existed in the Code of Hammurabi, in Philistine and ancient codes.
Phoenicians.
Yeah, Phoenicians, that seafaring nations. Since the Phoenicians, every nation that has abandoned its cabotage laws has disappeared. And often that disappearance was caused by failures of trade, failures of their businesses to survive and thrive. We're not getting rid of cabotage laws. We're going to control our coastwise trade. The problem is the non-contiguous states of Alaska and Hawaii and Puerto Rico are apparently severely impacted. They'd like to say severely. In some way, they're impacted economically because those goods have to be brought out to those places. Alaska, you can take a train up there and a truck, but still the vast amount of the cargo is going on vessels. So when you say we're going to end the, you have to look at the whole tapestry and say, is that possible? America's 300 plus million people. Alaska's got 1 million people. Hawaii's got about a million, maybe 3 million if you put them all together with Puerto Rico. Mm-hmm. You got 300 million people that are benefited by the Jones Act. So when you say we're going to get rid of it, you know, mm-hmm. get a life, man. This is just a bumper sticker story. You know, elect me and I'm going to do something. There's nothing that can be done locally in Hawaii to amend, change, or do anything with the Jones Act. So what those people are saying has no basis in reality. Not only is it wrong at a national level, mm-hmm. it's never going to happen because somebody gets elected governor here because he's against the Jones Act. So what? Mm-hmm. If he wants to do something about the Jones Act, he could get elected to Congress. And there's the problem with Alaska and Hawaii. The reason that Alaska and Hawaii's senators were such good friends is that we share in common a very small population. That means that the number of members of the House of Representatives that can affect our interests is very small.
Mm-hmm.
Out of 400 and some members of the House, we have a couple from each places. But we have two senators from each state. That's where the coffee cools in the Senate. And the Senate, we can exercise some say, you know, we're four with Alaska of the 100 senators. But it's not going to mean that the rest of America is going to jump on board to deal with our problems. There may be ways to solve the problems created by this unfair shipping burden on the non-contiguous states without doing anything with the Jones Act.
Mm-hmm.
My primary work in Hawaii is in the Jones Act. When I first came here, I initially worked with a law firm that defended American Hawaii Cruises and the other vessel owners and the insurance companies related to those businesses. And we had the independence in the Constitution. Do you remember that? Now, those mm-hmm. vessels were not built in America. Yet Senator Inouye managed to get an exemption to the Jones Act to allow them to ply the coastwise trade. You see the problem in Hawaii that's very unique, and that's that for somebody to go from Oahu to Maui, one American port to another American port, they first have to go to a foreign country, and we are the most remote island group in the world. So we had to go to Christmas Island and then come back to be able to go and do this little loop. Senator Inouye got an exemption to that so that American Hawaii Cruises in vessels that were not built in America
mm-hmm.
could travel around and do this loop. Now, the problem is, if there are too many vessels that are going around the islands of Hawaii, none of them are going to get enough work and passengers to make it survive. So besides for the exemption for the Jones Act, they also created monopolies mm-hmm. so that there would only be one group allowed to do it. And the theory was that this would justify the building of a new passenger liner or two to ply the waters of Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that did not get off the ground and work. But had it, then Inouye had to deal with the guy from Mississippi, the senator.
Trent Lott.
Yeah, to Pascagoula, Mississippi. Where
right, all the shipbuilding.
Shipbuilding that was primarily focused on building vessels of military interest to be retooled so that we could start doing passenger liners. But the reality of the economic situation in the world right now, in terms of the next 10, 20 years, are we going to be able to compete with Korea in building vessels, or with Japan, or with China? As it stands right now, no. The vast majority of vessels are being built there. Does this mean we should therefore get rid of cabotage? No, it means that we should actually start waking up and doing more
to protect our interests.
And our interests are greatly served. There are classic examples about how America needed to use Mattson's vessels to move cargo during the war, or other situations in which the Gulf lift, where the United States government could say to American bottoms, I'm sorry, but we're going to use your vessel here.
Right.
And we're going to do this, and we're going to cooperate, and we're going to do it with the least inconvenience, but you're going to do it today.
But with the foreign nation, South Korea is
not going to let us use their vessels to go reinforce the troops in Okinawa if there became a crisis there.
Right.
And we didn't have enough. And this crisis may not be the traditional seafaring warfare that we once had. These crises now could be medical.
Right.
I mean, we're looking at in an age of vast disasters that require instant relief, or as fast as you can get it. There isn't time to make these deals, and the individuals who own those vessels aren't going to volunteer to take their vessels out of a very lucrative economic situation.
Because they're privatized and they're subsidized by their government.
Yeah, and it's what's in it for me?
And how are you going to, you needing this today, or within the next week, to arrive and deliver those goods?
And there have been, the Jones Act has built into it certain pressure valves to relieve steam. The executive branch of the government has, the president can say, whoops, we need to move this oil right now to this place for national security reasons, and we can create an exemption and allow foreign bottoms to come in and operate. And there have been hundreds of these exemptions used in the last 20 years, in which the executive in its administration of that function of the government says, hey, we got to tweak this a little bit. So there's ways to get around the Jones Act. And there might, I'm just going on and on.
No, it's good.
So I came into this because I learned maritime law, which actually is very different. There are historical reasons why admiralty and maritime law is different. Back in England, England developed its laws by bringing laws in from all around the world. And Richard the Lionheart, when he was coming back from the Crusades, his mother, Eleanor of Aquitaine, convinced him that he ought to bring the maintenance and cure laws into the laws of England. The maintenance and cure laws are what allows a seaman to get medical care and a bunk roll, somewhere to stay, if he gets hurt. When you understand, it's like there's no workers' comp.
But no workers' comp at that time.
You had to be put on the shore. They would pay for your doctor. They would give you enough food. And they would repatriate you at the end of the day. This was a big deal in the Kingdom of Hawaii because people were coming here to hunt for whales. And people were getting hurt. They were being left overboard in Lahaina. There was a seaman's home. The Damon family comes from these roots. He was the original Damon that came here. Samuel Chenery Damon was the seaman's chaplain. And this was, a very big deal. And there's laws in the Kingdom of Hawaii that required vessels who plied the trade and used our harbors to pay bonds and money to the kingdom so that there was essentially a control of who was doing business here. And when individuals were left, the vessel had to pay to make sure that they were taken care of. Well, in England, the law developed in a similar way. Historically, there was a branch of the law which was run by the king. Are you doing treason? Was that murder? Where the king is against you. That's the court of law. Mm-hmm. There was another branch of the law that was controlled by the church. And this had to do with property rights and inheritance and marital relations and adoptions and all kinds of things. And that's called equity. And then there's a whole other branch of the law. And that's called admiralty and maritime law. And the people that the admirals didn't trust the king and didn't trust the church to run the business of the ports, because they understood that as soon as it became dangerous on a legal level for a vessel from Germany or a vessel from Spain or a vessel from France to come into your ports, they weren't going to come, and pretty soon all the other vessels would know, and there goes your economy. So the admirals were the ones who sat in decisions in the Court of Admiralty.
Mm-hmm.
In America, we took all that law when we became a nation, and then we developed it, and back as recently as about 1950, 1940, we merged these courts. So the same judge hears admiralty cases, same judge hears equity cases, same judge hears law cases, mm-hmm. and the rules that apply to each of them still are different.
Mm-hmm.
Like in my work in admiralty and maritime law, I've actually been able to go out and arrest a vessel. A vessel is personified under the law. It's looked at as though it's a person. And when it comes in, that vessel can have liens on it. Those are obligations that the vessel has to pay. And to repay one of those liens, you can go into the Court of Admiralty and you can seize the vessel and either require the owners to pay, or the vessel and its contents could be sold to satisfy the obligations of the ship.
Now, is that does that apply, or was it the situation with, there's a vessel that goes between the Micronesia, and at one time it was seized the situation?
Yeah, those rules are almost universal around the world. There's something called the Mareev Injunction.
Okay.
There are three great legal systems in the world. There's the civil law, the Code of Napoleon, which most of the nations that we consider to be advanced and civilized, they're civil law countries. And then there's the common law, which developed in England. And there's only, I think, six places where there's England, Canada, Australia, the United States, and just a few places that are controlled under the common law.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other system is called the socialist legal system. The vast majority of humanity is subject to socialist legal system laws in China and in what were the former Soviet republics. And they have a little bit different ways of dealing with their admiralty questions.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so there's another... So I got out of school and I came here, and at first I worked for a firm that helped take care of American Hawaii Cruises and other large shipping concerns, and it defended lawsuits brought by people that were injured. The Jones Act was very revolutionary to seamen at the time, because before the Jones Act, a sailor had no right to a recovery,
mm-hmm.
except to get this maintenance and cure. He had no cause of action in negligence until the Jones Act happened. And what that came about because there was a Railroad Act that was brought about in the mid-1800s when we were building railroads all over America. And there you had these virtual slave labor situations. And if a guy got hurt and lost his arm and he wanted a recovery from the company, he had to sue in a situation where the company had vast resources and highly trained lawyers to keep them from getting any recovery. And America created the Railroad Act to make it featherweight causation that the railroad person had to show. And then they could sue and get a recovery for their injuries.
So this is, again, I want to emphasize, this isn't just about taking cargo from one port to another.
Oh, you know, that's the bumper
Jones,
sticker.
And so this is why I reached out to you and doing some research, thinking there's a lot more to it than this, and someone is pulling the wool over it. For example, there to really get us bothered, it's going to drives up the shipping cost.
That is, there's an element of truth there.
Mm-hmm.
But the reality is we're the most remote island group in the world,
mm-hmm.
and it costs a lot to bring cargo here, and it always costs a lot to bring cargo, and we always paid more for our soap because it had to come here from the mainland or from somewhere else.
And that's the cost of paradise.
And that's the cost of paradise. Now, I think that there's a way that perhaps the other 48 states could help us by, in a sense, subsidizing some of those burdens. you know, where we, instead of necessarily building ships and doing all these other things, you keep the Jones Act and you figure out a way to equalize the burden amongst the many states. And we see that in the military, where Alaska and Hawaii share a few things in common. We're non-contiguous states, so we're harmed by our shipping laws. We are large, huge land masses or water masses. In Alaska, it's huge. I do a lot of work with stevedores up there in Anchorage and things, and it's just huge to go from one city to another. It's two Texases laid together. In Hawaii, we have these vast water resources. We have small populations. We have a large military presence. That large military presence puts burdens on our whole social system. But you don't hear people saying, well, let's get rid of, you know, housing the military up at Schofield. No. We look for ways to reduce the burdens on the community that the, you know, that, that being good neighbors with our military members of our community, that, you know, the, our schools and other things where we're not getting direct tax dollars can be subsidized. And the Jones Act may be fixed in that little element of the shipping burden on the non-contiguous states. The rest of the Jones Act, are we ever going to get rid of the idea that American seamen should be on these vessels? No way. We want a healthy merchant marine. You not only need the boats, you need the know-how and the technical abilities to get out there and to run those boats and to do it right. And similarly, loading and unloading boats are another aspect of the maritime community that's all connected. Goes back to the idea in England where the admirals just didn't trust leaving it up to the others who had different interests. The people who are saying, oh, get rid of the Jones Act, their interest is, I want my toilet paper to be a dime cheaper. Mm-hmm. And that's that, you know.
This is a bit of absurdity, but just recently there was a tractor-trailer truck in one of the states, the western states, that had 30,000 or 37,000 frozen chicken. And the driver abandoned it because there was a dispute of money. And I was thinking, I don't know if this is quite the parallel, but imagine you have a Korean flagged vessel, and we have a ship containing whatever, armaments or whatever, headed for a site, war theater. And they decide, no, it's a dispute. Or they get threatened. Are we, is our efforts and if our interests jeopardized through that? Just as a side thought.
I see how you put it together. You got cargo on the side of the road, and oh my God, what are we going to do with these frozen chickens?
And it's set up for 30 days.
You got no time to fix these problems or to go back and create legislation. The president has to be able to say, look, you know, we got a problem over here. It is of national concern. We need those chickens to make fried chicken for our troops, you know, who got the soccer games on Saturday. And so the president can order another American vessel to come in and to take care of it. And those vessels will be compensated. It's not like the owners of those vessels
are commandeered and taken over and all. And
yeah,
they will be compensated. But yeah,
we have a very healthy shipping industry in Hawaii. And we are really blessed. We've got like Walter Dodds, you know, I mean, a man of that character and quality of talent is running Matson. And these, they're really big challenges to keeping something like that together. I mean, this guy created the first Hawaiian banking empire that, you know, and he, this is a man of great stature who is hands-on trying to make sure that the shipping works. We got stevedoring companies, run by people like Tim Gard, have been doing this for literally generations, making sure that the loading and the unloading of the vessels runs smoothly. These are highly compensated workers, and the reason they get paid so much money is because it's a dangerous, highly technical job to get those vessels loaded and unloaded in the time allotted. The vessel pulls in underneath that crane, and that has to be moving container after container to get those things off so that vessel can move on and go to its next route, and the next vessel can get into the berth. You know, in terms of the Jones Act impact on Hawaii, there are other approaches to relieving the pressure of this problem. When you fly into cities anywhere along the west coast or the east coast, and you're going over and you can see the buildings, you see oceans of warehouses. Every city in America has these vast areas where you can store goods. You don't see that in Hawaii. Mm-hmm. We don't have any place to put it. So we're subject to the effect of, like when the stevedores struck, or the longshoremen working at the stevedores struck, and then we ran out of toilet paper and everybody hit the Costco's. There wasn't Costco then, but everybody mm-hmm. hit the stores and bought them all. And every time we have a hurricane warning, we're all running out there to gather up our stuff because there's not a lot of storage and we're afraid it's going to run out and we're going to be stuck without any.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that costs money to build these warehouses, but the ability to stockpile things that are not going to deteriorate is something that we're missing, and that normally that is a function of private industry, and it should be private industry, but it's perhaps a spot where we can release some of this pressure so that mm-hmm. there's a little more time in terms of when we need that next vessel coming in here.
Good morning, caller. Thank you for waiting. You have a comment or question?
Well, yes, I have a comment. I am absolutely enthralled with your gentleman. I would like to know his name.
Jay Friedheim.
Friedheim. The origin of my name is German. Friedheim. It means peaceful home. Nice to meet you. I live over in Kailua, and I've been here 26 years. And a few more generations, and I, too, will be a Kamaaina.
Well, I there's so much, the background, your history, the knowledge has really intrigued me, and I am just enthralled, especially the history about taking care of the sailors, and that is just, thank you, I guess is the best thing, because that's the part of the Jones Act. If you read it online, all of that history is not there. You know, it's just not. And to hear it put in such a fashion that we can follow along and understand it clearly is a godsend. Thank you so much.
Yeah, just Google Seaman's Rights. It'll steer you right there to that. But I the reason I brought Jay on is that we hear the other side and the Heritage Foundation laying out things. For example, it increases cost of energy. Of course, it's going if the cost goes up. I mean, in Houston, you can buy gas cheaper because it's closer to the refinery. Out here in the middle of the Pacific, who's going to give you a free trip? We have to pay for that.
Well, several months ago, you had a group from Michigan, was it?
Tennessee.
From Memphis, yeah. And they talked about the cost of grain and rice going up, therefore the cereal goes up. So if the cereal goes up, we can't say that that's the shipping cost. That's, mm-hmm. Where you're right, the other side kept telling us, oh, we'll save money, but if the cost of grain goes up, then it goes up for everybody.
Yeah. Okay.
The historical thing about you get rid of the Jones Act, you have no more American bottoms. They're going to have foreign vessels coming here. It's going to appear to be cheaper for a while. But as soon as they've got a monopoly or the majority of interest, the price of shipping is going to go up. Look, it's just what's going to happen. There is healthy competition going on. Unfortunately, there is a burden on American vessels that are trying to ply the coastwise trade. That burden is a reality of the national defense of our country and the cost of doing business as being an American. The issues, a lot of this is who's squaring off against who. A lot of the finger pointing and what's behind some of this Jones Act stuff is they would like to get rid of American employees. They can hire people out of Indonesia and the Philippines on these employment contracts, and they're not subject to paying and doing the kinds of things that America requires to be done for its employees. The unions, which a lot of people don't like unions, think it's not a good deal, but in reality, those unions have made it safe and economically beneficial for the people that they're working with. They have real lives, they get good money, they do a good job, and, it's it's something that's it's a very healthy part of America. We have very good unions here that are, you know, that are looking out for the interest. They're not evil because they're exerting, or you know, they're making arguments for the rights of the workers.
One of my questions that I had for you was that, is this a surreptitious way or a way of attacking the unions? We know that there is an effort to undermine unions anyway, and the people proposing this, so let's have Chinese vessels, and let's have, that would in fact, as we see the fishing, the longliners here, they use foreign vessels, just as you have described.
Foreign workers. That's right.
And so I was going to ask you, is this about, when you look at the composition of the people that are advocating against the Jones Act, that's consistent with their efforts to undermine unions.
And you bring up the longline fishing group, because that's something I have a lot of knowledge of. I've been here for 26 years, and when I first got here, this place was paradise for me, because every spot you could put a vessel, from Hawaii Kai to Pearl Harbor, there was another vessel dealing with the Japanese tourists, scuba, kite flying, snorkeling, all kinds of entertainment going on out there, sightseeing, fishing, and all the people that worked on those vessels were Jones Act seamen, and they're protected.
Mm-hmm.
I started to tell you about that there was this federal law created to protect the railroad workers.
Mm-hmm.
It worked out so well that railroad workers, when they got hurt, they would be taken care of. We're not talking about multi-million dollar recoveries. We're talking about a guy getting to go to the doctor because his arm got crushed. And then while he was getting better, he could get medical care. And then there would be, you know, he had a right to sue to get a recovery for the value of his losses. On seamen had no rights like that. So before there was a Jones Act, all you got was maintenance and cure, which is the cost of fixing your injury in terms of medical dollars, and the cost of like a bunkroll, you know, up to the most subsistent level of housing while you got better. But you still had no right for recovery for the negligence that the ship owner might have had. So the courts invented a concept called seaworthiness or unseaworthiness, and they said that vessels and vessel owners have a non-delegable duty to provide a vessel that is reasonably fit for its intended service. Doesn't mean it has to be perfect, but I've had vessels go out where the masts were rusted through and they'd known it for years and they finally broke.
Collapsed.
And then collapsed and broke a guy's arm or their back or whatever. And that before there was a Jones Act, the injured sailor had only a right in maintenance and cure, and then in unseaworthiness. And after we brought in this railroad law, FILA, and the Jones Act, then a sailor had a right to a recovery. They're exempted from state workers' comp programs.
Mm-hmm.
So the law that I studied and worked on was, well, who's a sailor? And that's, you know, and again, it's something that's created by Supreme Court language. It's a person who's more or less permanently attached to a vessel in navigation and whose service performs some function that contributes to the mission of the vessel. That meant that on American Hawaii cruises, the barber who cut your hair was as much a sailor as the guy who let the anchor down when it came into port. And they're all protected under this
program. Because
if
he slipped and cut his finger off and wasn't protected, he'd bleed to death.
Well, they would fix him, but he would have no way to recover for that loss
right.
of that finger, and he's not protected by workers' comp.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the part of the Jones Act that I always hear about, and there, it's often fueled by an anti-union sentiment.
Mm-hmm.
And you may not like unions, or you may not like the fact that these people who are protected by unions apparently get a good wage and have good, safe working conditions. But without those unions, the benefits disappear. There used to be longline vessels that the sailors here could come into American courts and get relief. Now they're being operated right here in the ports of Honolulu by companies that give you rented labor from the Philippines. And those people have agreed that they will go back to the Philippines and arbitrate any disputes that they have as the result of an injury on those vessels. I used to have many, many clients who were American citizens of many origins. A lot of people from Vietnam are very good sailors and fishermen. New American citizens going out there, those jobs have disappeared. They're now being given to Indonesian and Filipino non-residents who cannot even get off the boat when they're at the pier and go to the hospital without a customs individual taking them along.
Let me read something here. This is taken from the Heritage Foundation website, heritage.org. Quote, sink the Jones Act, restoring America's competitive advantage in maritime related industries, by Brian Slattery, Brian Riley, and Nicholas Loris. Abstract, the Jones Act drive, this is their claim, the Jones Act drives up shipping costs, increases energy costs, stifles competition, and hampers innovation in the U.S. shipping industry. And now, if you're getting, you're saying, let's build them in China, how will that stifle the American how will it help the American shipping industry if you're advocating to have them built in China and Korea?
Well, I don't adhere to their opinion, but I believe that their thinking and their logic is that if the costs of living were down, if the costs of production were lowered, businesses could thrive. It's kind of the Reagan trickle-down economics thing, you know, that, well, you know, these companies are going to save more money and everybody's going to be better and prosper. And I don't have a dog in that fight. You know, I mean, I'm not advocating one political side or the other. In fact, politician-wise, we've been really blessed with some very talented political savvy in our state for a long time. Senator Inouye was well-versed in these issues and could get things like fixes for the Jones Act that directly applied to Hawaii that could help businesses. Their argument is, well, why should you have to have somebody like Senator Inouye to fix it? And like I said before, it's because the rest of America gets so much other payoff from the Jones Act that they're not going to get rid of the whole thing just because Hawaii and Alaska, two relatively small in population states, feel that way. It's going to be done through an act of Congress.
Mm-hmm.
All right, and like Colleen Hanabusa, this is an individual that actually really gets the Jones Act, really understands what's going on there. She has spent her life not only serving as a politician, but she's helped with union matters involving stevedores and seamen. She understands shipping industry. She's well-briefed. I was a part of a talk there in which another man named Hansen, who's a very good advocate for the anti-Jones Act crowd, who represents shipping interest, very articulate, very knowledgeable, but I believe a little misinformed, or we have a different set of values. Yeah, his value is lower the price of the stuff at the pump, and everybody's going to be better off, and that's the most important value. I believe the most important value is our national security and the concerns for an orderly working of our country, of our commerce. And that's why I say when we have people like Dodds and union officials that are really doing a fine job, and we've got, you know, politicians that are going in there and advocating, all the politicians that really get the Jones Act, they're not talking about
changing it.
They're, you know, and many of the politicians don't have anything to do with it. Someone in Montana just doesn't get Jones Act issues. They're not as concerned about those issues. So when they say, elect this mayor, elect this governor, elect this individual to your state senate, and he's going to do something about the Jones Act, that's not, and there's no reality connected
to that. You're from the South, too. You went to school there. Yeah. This is called tomfoolery.
There you go. And
nothing more.
But it does mobilize your base.
Right.
You know, and I guess that, you know, there's an effort to get somebody elected, and then they'll figure it out. But if you really look at the bigger picture, we should be figuring out ways to help our shipping industry remain healthy, keep the prices at a level in which we can afford to live out here in the middle of the ocean.
Well, I'm going to see if I can get some of the advocates for the change of the Jones Act,
yeah,
and bring you in and have you. I would really, because you know, there's these pockets of discussions, and when you hear them speak, it's, yep, we've got to get rid of the Jones Act. It would enhance everything. And I'm trying to think. We're complaining about China having Walmart
at its fingers, and Walmart having a great relationship, and we are in debt to China. Now we want to give them more? Is that the solution to our financial problems or security, national security?
Having Americans look out for American interests, where American products, American companies, American welfare is concerned, makes really good sense, because mm-hmm. we actually have some control. We can elect those people that make those decisions.
Where do we get this big heart from? It looks like this party wants to give everything, invite everybody here. Here, I'll give you a little bit of this. But when we look at it, the unions are undermined, as you mentioned earlier, in Tennessee, and the unions can't get any support. And it just seems like strike here, strike there, undermine here, and eventually, as you say, it will destroy the union, the climate of union.
I think we need to look at how to achieve the results that is being asked for by the individuals who say end the Jones Act without ending the Jones Act. We maybe need to tweak it or amend it slightly, but mm-hmm. even that is going to be very difficult. It's like we're looking at a giant tapestry that is made up of all these threads, and it puts together a beautiful picture, and that's America and our life today. And you go in there and you say, well, let's try to pull this little thread out of the tapestry, and let's pull this little thread out of the tapestry. Pretty soon, the image that the tapestry portrayed to us, which is the quality of our lives, is diminished. Mm-hmm. And that, I think, we need the long-range insight of politicians that are going to be there for a long time, which is like why Senator Inouye and why we had something that was enormous in terms of political power, political control, and now we need to grow that again.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Okay. Well, thank you. We'll.
My pleasure.
I'm definitely going to reach out and ask some others, and we'll give a total 2 hours to this, because there's so much, and I've read and read and read, and I thought, well, you know what? Let him come in the first day, and we'll talk, and because I hadn't given much thought about the sailors themselves, the injuries, the illnesses, the economy. And then I start to do some research and find out the claims. I don't believe that there's one single politician who's advocating to undermine it will ever succeed based on the other states, because they benefit as well. Trent Lott is not going to back down. He's out of politics now. But in Mississippi, you know as I know, they may leave office, but they still have control.
Yeah, and the reason is because they're advocating for the rights of their brethren and their people that give them that control.
Right.
You know, I mean, they're helping out their homeboys, and the good mm-hmm. old boys want Pascagoula putting out ships, and unfortunately, we're not putting out enough of them. What we need to do is to catch up, not to abandon our participation in the maritime.
Now, even the long line of vessels, many of them, or in Gulf shrimperies and what have you, were built in Mississippi
and are now here. Yeah. And
so
those vessels are used to hire Americans who were subject to American courts. Now they're getting many of them from foreign countries
right.
who are not protected. The quality of life and care that's given to those workers that come here from Indonesia and from the Philippines is way less than the quality of care that was given to the people that worked on American bottoms when we were using American labor.
And the fishermen don't get the dollar that they deserve because of the control at the auction. So this guarantee that it's going to benefit the sailors, it really, by undermining it or killing it, is really, there's no proof.
It's a complicated problem. It's a whole lot of strings all tied together in a giant knot.
Yeah.
Okay.
Well, thank you, Jay. My guest was Jay Friedheim,
yep.
And we're going to have him back. He's with Admiralty Law. 545-5454 is a phone number, 545-5454. And if you want to send an email to him, jlf@pixi.com. Jay, thank you. And this is the Carol Cox Show, and we'll see you in the next hour. And my guest is going to be Miss Malia de la Pena. And we're going to be talking about belly dancing. It's that time of the year, and, you know, art is art, and we're going to be talking about that. So please join me in the next hour. And, Jay, thank you.
Thank you so much.
Aloha.
Stay tuned for the second half of the Carol Cox Show right after the news on KWAI Honolulu, K108. Show right here at K108. If you have questions or comments for Carol, our number here is 524-1080, 524-1080. And now here's Carol.
Hey, good morning. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show. Little delay here. I have this morning, again, as I announced earlier, the belly dance good folks, and Malia De La Pena.
And Gina Snowden.
And Gina Snowden. If you recall, Gina and Malia was on the show last year.
Yay.
And you might want to know, I got to confess, there's two reasons that I invited them back. You know, I just turned 61, so dirty old man had to call them back because they're beautiful women. But in all honesty, without being a bigot here, and sounded like one. The reason I invited them back is because culture is something that's important to me. I've always found that there's a joy to, when I moved to Los Angeles, I was amazed at how many opportunities the public could go free to see belly dancing, or to see Arabic music played, or hear, or orchestras for free.
Mm-hmm.
And so I know how much I benefited from that. And belly dancing is an art form, is an art, and it's just a good thing. And so I believe in hoping that I can contribute to the growth and help educate people, because where there's culture, there's less hatred, in my opinion.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much for supporting the belly dancers around the world and here in Hawaii.
Yeah.
We so much appreciate it.
Tell me about this, or introduce yourself. You're Malia De La Pena.
Aloha and good morning, everyone. I'm Malia De La Pena. I'm the creator and founder of the Hawaii Belly Dance Convention. And this morning I brought my beautiful, amazing friend, Gina Snowden, who also is a big part of the convention. She does the marketing and, oh my God, she's my right-hand girl.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be killing myself without her right now.
Lowly student and biggest fan.
We're preparing and getting all psyched up for the 10th annual Hawaii Belly Dance Convention in 2 weeks here in Honolulu, Hawaii. And we're so excited. Thank you for having us back here, Carol.
So,
ooh, some jams.
So tell me, how many people and what's this event?
This event is a huge cultural event here in Hawaii. I believe it's the largest Middle Eastern belly dance event here in the state. We have visitors from Japan, Canada, Las Vegas, New York, all over the world come here to share their passion and love for the dance and to visit our beautiful paradise we call home. We're so blessed. It's a five-day event. It starts, the big show starts Friday at the Honolulu Museum of Arts, the Doris Duke Theater. And this year, we decided to do a two-show showcase due to the fact that our one event, our one show, sells out every year. So this year, we're doing two shows, two very different shows. But they're both at the Doris Duke Theater on Friday, October 10th.
The Doris Duke Theater.
Yes, at the Honolulu Museum of Arts, right in downtown Honolulu.
And who are some of the people? You're bringing some out of state, correct?
Yes.
And who
so
are they?
I am
I
so
was
selfish.
Looking at that list.
I am so selfish, and I always want to learn and bring amazing talent here to Hawaii so we can be inspired and just learn more. And by doing this, doing the convention, I get to bring in my most favorite dancers from around the world to Hawaii, some of them their first time to paradise, to come and share what they love and we love. So we have four of the most amazing instructors. We have Ashley Lopez. She's from Oregon. She's a tribal belly dancer. She is jaw-dropping, just amazing, spectacular performer. She's also an opera singer and a Pilates instructor. But she's coming to Hawaii for the very first time. She's teaching seminars and performing in both shows, as well as Amira from Las Vegas. This will be her second time to Hawaii. I brought her here about 10 years ago for my very first sponsorship of having a seminar in Hawaii. And she does traditional and oriental Middle Eastern belly dance. She's from Europe. She has a huge following worldwide. And she's so excited to be back in Hawaii. And then we have, oh my God, the young and gorgeous amazing Shahrazad from Virginia. She's 22 whole years old, and she just blows my mind. She's so amazing. Check her out on YouTube, Shahrazad Belly Dance. Gorgeous, amazing, so talented, and she's so excited to come to Hawaii. It's her very first time. She's staying with me in my home.
S-H-A-H-R-Z-A-D,
Shahrazad.
Okay, and she's from?
Shahrazad, from Virginia.
Okay.
Fabulous dancer. Staying with me in my home. I don't think she's going to want to leave because our job is to show them the time of their lives. We're taking them out for Mai Tais at the Halikoa, and then we're going on a catamaran cruise, hiking through waterfalls.
They'll be moving.
Oh, my. Yeah, they'll be staying forever. I may have roommates permanently.
And is there limited room or how on this, the functions and all, how is there limited room or tickets on demand or limit number of tickets or what?
Okay, so for the shows, there's 300 seats per show.
Okay.
For both showcases. And then the seminars, they do fill out. The seminars are at the Neil Blaisdell on Saturday and Sunday following the showcase, which is the 11th and 12th of October. And that does sell out as well because we don't want to have it too squishy. Everybody's hitting each other. So we try to keep it packed nice and comfortably. So that will sell out as well. Everything is available online on our website, HawaiiBellyDanceConvention.com. Also, there's another instructor I didn't get to mention. He's a male instructor, a male belly dancer, and he is just amazing.
Awesome.
He came last year. He's the Hawaii Belly Dance Convention's first ever male belly dancer. His name is Frank Farinaro. He currently lives in New Mexico. And he's on this beautiful flyer that you're seeing, the beautiful purple flyer.
Oh, yeah,
Shimi Showcase.
Right.
That's Shahrazad on the top left and Frankie in the bottom right.
Mm-hmm.
And he came last year. He didn't leave. He wanted to stay forever.
Yeah.
I think he wants to be my brother.
So this this effort of yours has grown.
Oh, my gosh.
You started when your original show started, where was it? And how
The very, very first showcase that we did? Oh, my God. I think we did it at the Schofield at one of the restaurants there. I can't remember.
And now you're at the Doris Duke.
And now
and
the Doris
Blaisdell.
Duke and the Blaisdell.
And the Blaisdell, yeah.
We're so blessed.
So in 5-6 years from now, you'll be, Honolulu will be recognized as one of the...
The hubs for Middle Eastern belly dance?
Yeah.
God, I hope so.
Sounds like
you're
moving.
God, I hope so,
I mean,
yes. That's what we're trying to do.
You guys have worked hard.
We're working our booties off, but we love it. We
belly,
love it.
You're working your belly off.
Right? Working your belly and booties.
True that.
Rihanna works.
Yes, she does.
Yeah, you got to see Malia's belly move, and you'll be like, okay, yeah, she's definitely working her belly off.
We do this event and produce this event straight for love and passion for the arts. We bring everyone here just for a really, really fun, good time, and also to educate the local community of what we do. And yes, there are belly dancers here amongst the Polynesian arts.
Yeah, so, Della Pena.
Della Pena.
Is that your wedded name? Or
That's my name. That's my name, not my wedded name.
So, with the Della Pena, where did you get the interest in belly dancing? Or how did you come about?
Well, let me explain my name a little bit.
Okay.
So, Della Pena is Spanish for of the pineapple.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of like to describe myself as a pineapple. So I'm thorny and sharp and hard on the outside, and sweet and juicy and yummy on the inside.
Okay.
So
it's true.
It's true. People say I have rough edges.
Yeah.
I think just businesswoman, you know.
Well, to do what you're doing and to assemble such an effort, and there's many dance activities in the city here, for example, African dance and Cuban dances and all, and salsa now seems to be
a
big thing.
Oh, yes. There's a big salsa convention. Those are friends of ours that produce that event.
Mm-hmm.
They go hard as well.
Yeah. So, but Ms. Snowden, how about you? Now, you're going to, what's your role? Last year you came, and,
well,
I was amazed. You're from San Francisco.
I'm from the Sacramento.
The Sacramento area, okay.
I was in the military for a very long time, and I started as a student with Malia at Pearl Harbor Block Arena a long time ago. And after I retired from the military, she invited me to be in her troupe. And so I eventually, after some coercion, got involved with her troupe. But even before then, I would go to the showcases when she was hosting them then at the time at the Halikoa.
Mm-hmm.
And I always, you know, tried to support and, you know, show up because I, like you, feel the same way about culture.
Mm-hmm.
That the more that we expose ourselves to culture and travel and art, the more we are tolerant and understanding of each other's passions and places in the world. So when I saw that Amelia, this little Polynesian girl with this backbone of steel and this this very strong will, I was really impressed. And I thought, you know, coming from a military background, this is what I want to do. I want to work with people that have this passion, that are singular, that are standing alone amongst a larger picture in their own form.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought this form and learned it herself and held it down in Hawaii in the midst of some other amazing art forms and let it blossom.
Mm-hmm.
And now she's tending this garden, and it's growing and it's growing, and I'm just really happy to be a part of it. So I just try to help out as much as I can. So I'm kind of like her fan girl and her friend, and she's like my little sister, and sometimes she's like my mom.
Oh,
you know, well, she's so much younger.
I'm going to post this picture. You're going to share the picture with
me. Yes.
And Ms. Snowden, you are retired military?
I'm retired Air Force.
And, you know, folks, if you saw her, you go out right now and get your belly dancing outfit and start dancing.
I tell you, I tell people all the time, they say, well, I can't believe you served 28 years in the military. I say, well, because I dance. And
yeah.
You saw my teacher and how she makes us work.
Right.
You would look like this, too. So.
Well, you're beautiful anyway. It doesn't matter.
Oh,
I mean, but for 20, I wish I could look that good. But, you know, but again, let's say there's someone out there want to learn belly dancing or, you know, like there's Zumba and what have you.
Mm-hmm.
Is it, can it be used for an exercise or can it be in an, you know?
Most definitely.
Absolutely.
And if so, do you guys give classes or are there efforts?
Can I mention something? Yeah. When I retired from the military, I have some significant physical injuries and I had a lot of pain.
Mm-hmm.
And belly dance really helped me. It helped with some hip issues and some back issues that I had. I had also some cervical issues. And as crazy as this may sound, balancing a sword on my head actually helped realign my neck. So I've had a lot of...
Don't try this at home, kids.
Yeah, don't try this at home. Go to Malia first to learn how to balance a sword on your head. Don't just do it at home.
Wait, balancing a sword.
Well, you have to come and see the show on Friday, October 10th, Mr. Carol Cox.
Oh, so I how did I
giving
miss
away secrets, Gina?
No, how did I miss the sword? I'm like other men too would probably miss seeing the sword when you're dancing.
We I'm known in Hawaii as the prop queen. I love to use props with the dancing. Mm-hmm. So we use many different kind of props, from finger cymbals, the little bells on your hands, mm-hmm. to silk veils and polyester veils, to dangerous sharp samurai mm-hmm. swords. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And we balance in some parts of our body, and including our head, as Gina has said.
Anyway, a little difficult there. So, hey guys, 524-1080 is the number, and Malia and... the belly dance troupe and all, and the efforts, they got a ticket they would give you.
Two adult tickets
if you want to try. So if you're the third caller, or is there a question you want answered?
I have, maybe. If they've ever seen me belly dance with a sword, mm-hmm. where do they like that I placed it the best? Mm. Maybe they would like to answer. Maybe they've seen.
Yeah. That excludes half the listeners.
Maybe third caller's easiest.
Yeah. Okay, if you want to call in, the third caller that I can pick up, you get a free ticket there to the belly dance.
To the 10th annual Shimmy Showcase produced by the Hawaii Belly Dance Convention on Friday, October 10th.
And if you don't call, no problem, we'll take the ticket.
Carol's coming anyway.
And with that ticket, what they get is an amazing pre-show. Mm-hmm. There's a reception before each show. At 6 o'clock, the reception is going to be a nice, amazing wines that Leah personally picked out.
Greek and Egyptian wines and
yep.
beers.
And there's going to be vegan food.
By
as
Green
well
and Vines. Indian cuisine by India Cafe.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Henna artist by Ha'ole Henna. DJ by Native Girl. Mm-hmm. And some live performances that we'll keep secret.
Who are some of your other sponsors?
We have the most amazing partners this year. Gina has helped so much with this. Green and Vine is an amazing sponsor located on Kapiolani. It's a raw vegan cuisine. She's going to be catering food during the reception, as well as India Cafe. They're located in Kailua. Jiva is the owner, and he always partners with us every year. Mm-hmm. We're also going to be having henna artists, which is a beautiful art that you can have not permanently, temporary tattooed on your skin, and that's from Ha'ole Henna. Kiyomi is the owner. She's amazing. She was there last year as well. And then we're going to have live performances by some of the local and visiting talents. Actually, we have Jeannie performing during the reception from Japan. Mm-hmm. There's five of these gorgeous girls coming from Japan and performing during the reception. It's going to be awesome. And, of course, DJ Native Girl is going to be mixing up some sexy Middle Eastern Buddha bar mixed music during the reception. Mm-hmm. So the reception is kind of like the festival part.
So this is a crossroads of culture.
Yes.
Absolutely. You'll be amazed to see the amount of people that really enjoy this art form and all the little facets of this art form, from the musicians, the mm-hmm. dancers,
live drumming,
the food, the wine, everything. So I think that we should actually next year change it from reception to festival.
Yes, it's very much like a cultural festival.
Very festive, and most people probably know what the courtyard looks like at Honolulu Museum of Arts. So imagine that packed full of beautiful people in their beautiful outfits. That's going to be like a red carpet type festival.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be belly dancers taking pictures with you and your family or friends.
Mm-hmm.
So there's just going to be so much going on, you'll say, oh, what? There's a show, too?
Yes.
So that's in addition to the show. So your ticket is actually like almost two for one.
Mm-hmm.
Also, for those that might be interested in seeing both sides, the Essence and the Unveiling, there's a discount if you go to both shows.
It's a two-show
well
feature.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
So there's a lot there, a lot for the price.
524-1080 is the number if you want to try. Call in and get a free ticket to the Belly Dancing Festival.
Yes.
But you say Japan, mm-hmm. The young ladies from... So this one event is going to cause many people from all points of the world, the globe, to come
yes.
hear something.
Yes, and that's what we want. Mm-hmm. We want that. We want to bring them to paradise and share what we love so much. Mm-hmm. It's the most amazing thing, the opportunity. And I travel a lot as well. So when I get to travel, I'm constantly saying, come visit Hawaii. Come mm-hmm. in October. We have the convention.
Do you guys go dance in other places?
Yes. We dance for corporate events, small events, from birthdays to weddings mm-hmm. to promotional parties. We also dance weekly at the Kenzaman on Nu'uanu. Kenzaman mm-hmm. is a beautiful Lebanese and Moroccan restaurant. Mm-hmm. And a few of the girls and myself and visitors dance there every week, Wednesdays at 7:30 p.m. And yes, you asked earlier about classes. There are mm-hmm. some amazing belly dance classes available in Hawaii. My personal classes are held on Sunday mornings on Kapiolani at 11 a.m. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be happening in about a half an hour from now. mm-hmm. And then we also hold a class on the military base on Pearl Harbor at the Joint Base Fitness Center. There's a lot of beautiful, amazing talents here in Hawaii, and we're so blessed that they're collaborating with us this year. So one I'd like to mention is Kalai Kaina and the Shaki Dance Movement. She's going to be dancing in the unveiling, our second showcase, and she's a local instructor here as well, and she's very supportive. We have amazing support by the Pretty Peacock Productions, which is Lola Love and her team of aphrodisiacs. Mm-hmm. They're dancing in the unveiling as well. We have Mabzi from Cherry Blossom dancing in the unveiling. We have girls from Kauai coming down, the Garden Nile Belly Dance Troupe. They'll be dancing in the Essence. Is the phone ringing, Carol? Mm-hmm. Is someone calling? Yay, tickets!
Good morning, caller. Thanks for calling in. You.
Hello.
Yes.
Caller number three.
Good morning.
Well, you're caller number one, and you'll get a ticket.
Yay!
If you would, you have access to email or. And we'll leave it at will call. You want to give your name?
Sure. Noah.
Lola?
Noah.
Noah.
Noah. N-O-A.
N-O-A-H.
N-O-A-H.
Like Noah's Ark. Good morning,
yeah, like
Noah.
Noah's Ark. I have a friend from Alexandria, and she showed me how to belly dance. So
Alexandria in California?
In Egypt.
Oh, in Egypt. Oh, my God. Okay, of course. Hello. Hi. Thanks, Noah, for calling. We'll have two tickets for you reserved at the door.
Oh, perfect. Thank you so much.
For the 6 p.m. Essence Showcase.
And what date? Again?
This is Friday, October 10th at the okay. Honolulu Museum of Arts Doris Duke Theater. Make sure you use the Mauka entrance, okay? The theater entrance, Noah.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Thank you for calling.
Aloha, Noah.
Aloha.
Enjoy.
Aloha.
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 So, well, with all of this, the dancing and all, is there a, I saw a group, a band that was playing, look, as they were playing the
recently?
Music.
Yeah. In
playing
Hawaii?
Some of the, yeah, and I thought, but maybe I was wrong. It was, maybe they were just practicing one song.
There are some really good Egyptian-style right. Arabic musicians here in Hawaii, and we're actually
absolutely.
Featuring a few of them in our showcase.
Okay.
Nico Rise is a really good friend of ours and an amazing tabla and dumbek player. He'll be playing during the reception. That you saw him? Is
that
him?
That's what he was playing, the Dumbek.
Yes, oh, okay. Miko Rise, he's amazing. You can find all these performers on our website, www.hawaiibellydanceconvention.com, and mm-hmm. you can find every performer that's going to be involved and actually links to them. So if you're looking to learn to play the tabla or you're just inspired and want to keep an update on when there's any events, just join us on the Facebook or online. And we also have an amazing tabla player, and she plays the Rick as well, Tara Severns. Mm-hmm. She's great as well and very, very talented. They teach lessons as well
mm-hmm.
and perform with us.
So
Arabic singer as well.
Oh, my goodness, Adley Mirza. Oh, my Adley. How did I forget him? He's so,
fabulous.
You've
really...
And he teaches Arabic at HPU.
Okay.
So if you're looking to learn Arabic, how to mm-hmm. speak it fluently, he'll be singing in Arabic at the convention as well during the Essence Showcase.
Well, I do apologize if we were talking about government and people not doing right, with the phones would be ringing off the hook, or you know, or somebody got pinched. But you know, but again, it's all for good to have you here and sitting and talking and about that, because there is some child out there may be touched when go to one of these things and be inspired.
to dance or to do whatever or to learn the music.
The children love to watch Middle Eastern belly dancing.
Yeah.
We're like a bunch of Jasmines dancing on stage.
Mm-hmm.
We're princess, you know what I mean? They love that.
Other than this event, is there other performances that you do where the general public can attend? And if so, where?
All the time. Every week we are constantly dancing and performing because we love it so much. If you just find us on Facebook or visit us online, you'll find the performers and links to all our events. We're constantly posting and updating. Ong King is an amazing supporter for us. They do a big event First Friday. Shane Miller, she'll also be performing in the unveiling. But we do a lot of events with her. There's so much. I can't even begin to.
Amelia puts us up at Ala Moana Mall. Is a
the shopping
really
center. Yeah,
a big place for us. And I just want to say that every year, Malia does this thing where she invites newcomers.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know about other teachers in other disciplines, not just Middle Eastern, but she is one of the few teachers I've ever seen that invite newcomers to the art form to be in her troupe.
Yeah.
So what you'll see during the essence is a bunch of women of all different ages, shapes and sizes, and
abilities, backgrounds,
military, civilian. We have medical professionals, mothers.
Teenagers, children.
Exactly, children even.
Yep.
So she invites us all to come together, and over the year, we put together our performance. And it's such an amazing journey, if you will. And I see, after doing this for a few years now and her troupe, I've seen the development from the other end, and I just think it's amazing.
It's the most beautiful thing.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a young girl that's in the military, in the Navy, and she was like me, awkward in the military. And
masculine.
Masculine.
Dominant.
And afraid of the feminine side, you know, afraid to balance those two things. And so I see these young military girls doing this, and I think, wow, it took me 28 years to get to this point. So when you talk about, you know, that there's some young girl or young kid out there that's going to be affected, absolutely. You know, I think this is like to see these young military women be able to balance their, you know, their military responsibility and be strong and capable in the military, and then, you know, and class, be able to let that go and reconnect with their feminine side, I think is just absolutely
finding
beautiful.
Balance.
I appreciate that so much from you. Yeah, I just want to
I love you. I appreciate
learning,
you.
Learning, yeah. I mean, for myself, I love to hear Nicki Minaj and Rihanna and all of those, Usher and, you know, and on and on and on, Maroon 5 or whatever. But you got to inject a little culture along the way, because
absolutely.
I would hate to be living in a culture where it's all about the boombaka on the shoulder, because it enriches us and it teaches us being able to understand dance and to participate or view it. It teaches us something about another culture, another people.
So important.
And it's like an antiseptic, in my opinion, to a little bit of hatred and whatever, by bringing that in, you know. And some of the listeners probably don't get it, but there's a grand benefit.
Absolutely.
I mean, and it's immeasurable, because when you tear down walls of hatred or you ignorance, and just a mere, you know, what is that? The ambassador. Like, we send ambassadors abroad for entertainment and whatever. And what we're doing, we're saying, let them know we're okay. You know, and so this dance, that's why I applaud you for assembling it and putting it together and inviting this list of people and the supporters. Names would never, they may be little small venues, but this, it seems like you're getting bigger and bigger, and probably.
Thank you so much. Yes.
How much support do you get from the tourism authority of the trade? Do they support you?
And not at this point. We haven't reached out to them too heavily at this point. I think we're waiting till we're really, really solid on our feet.
And I've noticed that a lot of times, you know, when you reach out to some of the businesses, for instance, I guess they're so used to people just wanting something for nothing that they can't believe that this is just a passion thing. It's not a not-for-profit officially, but it may as well be, because it's about the passion, you know? I mean, I don't know how else to say it. it, right? It's all about the love. So, you know, when you go out to the community and you say, hey, you know, would you like to partner with us? We don't want a monetary partnership. We want a supportive, collaborative partnership.
We want to collaborate.
And that's when another thing that I like about being involved is that, like you said about the ambassadorship, mm-hmm. it's like I feel like I'm helping Malia be an ambassador for this whole performance, for this whole event, and for Middle Eastern dance mm-hmm. by going to these community places or these businesses and explaining to them, hey, we're not coming to you with our hand out. We're coming to you to clasp hands mm-hmm. and, you know, promote aloha and promote this art form here in Hawaii and show
yes.
people that there's a lot going on in Hawaii. And
yes.
this is worth your time, your energy, and your hard-earned money to come here.
And this, yeah. this is this effort here, this program that you're putting on, the festival.
The Hawaii Belly Dance Convention.
Convention. I mean, we have so many cultures here. And it's I equate it to the just going out and eating. You got so many things
oh
to
my
choose
goodness. The
from
best food in the world here
in Hawaii.
Hawaii.
You know,
the
I
biggest
mean,
selection.
Unless you went to some other country in Morocco or something mm-hmm. and get the. But right here in Hawaii, you can get Indian, you can get Russian, you can get Chinese, you can get Korean,
very true.
You know,
very
Americanized.
True.
And that's what we should be putting on our plates as well, mm-hmm. culturally.
Mm-hmm. You know?
Yes, yes.
And there's a lot of work done. What about, you know, we're in a Hawaiian culture, you know, the culture of hula and whatever.
Mm-hmm. Polynesian.
Is anyone blending the two, or is there any?
A bunch of my girls were previously hula and Tahitian performers. And so they have a beautiful background of graceful movement as well. There's some amazing Polynesian dancers that will come in and supporting the event as well.
Yeah, the Tahitian dancers are mm-hmm. that rapid moving. And so how is it, which is
comparable?
Easiest? Which is easiest to adopt or get involved, the Tahitian, the Hawaiian hula dancer, or to transition into belly dancing?
Oh my goodness, I don't know if anything makes anything easier. It's easier to me to train performers when they have a clean canvas, and I say mm-hmm. this, so the less amount of dance background they have, the easier it is for me to train them.
Really?
Because if they come in with a different posture or different technique, okay, some of my Polynesian dancers that come, okay. So the number one thing is our shimmy, the hips are pivoting up and down, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But in Tahitian, they're doing little tiny omis, little tiny circles. Mm-hmm. So it takes me a couple years to retrain a Polynesian dancer to shimmy like an Egyptian style shimmy.
Mm-hmm.
And the girls that are listening are probably laughing because I'm constantly yelling in class, stop the omi, stop the circle. We're going up and down, up and down, up and down. So it is a challenge to mix the two, but they're both so beautiful
right.
and both so
and
amazing to learn.
The dancers, though, they have a big advantage because they have the beautiful hand movements and
yes.
the beautiful presence.
Yes.
So in class, I'm watching all these. I feel like I have a classroom full of teachers. Because I'm watching Malia, then I'm watching this other girl over here who has a background in Tahitian, and then I'm watching another girl that has a background in hula, watching her hands and being inspired
most
by
amazing
all of them.
Arm
so
movements.
The Polynesian girls, if they want to learn belly dance, they're going to have a little bit of a challenge, but they're also going to be, like, once they get it, they're going to be like,
amazing
flying.
At it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. yeah.
Because
yes.
belly dancing, there's use of hands as
absolutely.
Well. And,
yes.
right?
Hands are very expressive.
And in
yes.
hula, the hands come
well.
Into place.
Yes.
So, but that doesn't give a hula dancer a jump ahead of the game in learning.
Due to the gracefulness, yes. The gracefulness
right.
helps. But some of the technique is a little different.
Mm-hmm.
So the technique is not the same.
Mm-hmm. And do you really, well, can you do belly dancing without the music? You know, like you take a hula.
Well, yes.
I'm curious because.
Well,
that,
yes.
You know.
Interesting question you asked, sir. our second showcase, the second show, which starts at 8, is called The Unveiling. And it took us a while to manifest what we wanted to do with the second show because we didn't want to do two exactly the same shows. And our show is very usually traditional and folkloric and the roots of belly dance or Middle Eastern dance with the Arabic singer and the drummers and all that. The second show is something totally different that Hawaii has never seen. The second show is called The Unveiling, 8 o'clock on Friday, October 10th. And we describe it as the central exploitation of Middle Eastern belly dance.
Mm-hmm.
It's an evolution of the dance. So if you want to come and see this, I'm actually belly dancing to dubstep. And that's a little pushing the envelope, a little edgier, a little outside of the box. Mm-hmm. But we wanted the artists to feel that way. We wanted the artists to be able to do a piece they haven't been able to perform for any traditional cultures or events.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm actually, in my piece as well, I'm dancing to the most sensual song I've ever heard in my life that may be a little bit too intense for a restaurant or a birthday party or a wedding. This is more of a stage performance. And I'm dancing to this song by Natasha Atlas. She's a French and Arabic singer. And it's the most, I sent it to you by email, Carol, but you didn't get it.
Yeah, well,
but it's the most beautiful song in the world, Natasha Atlas.
Atlas. And what is the name of it?
And Amonquiliba.
Okay.
Oh my God, I'll send it to you again by email. It's so beautiful.
Okay.
And all the artists that are dancing in the unveiling are doing things a little over the edge, out of the box,
mm-hmm.
utilizing Middle Eastern dance and fusing it with whatever their background is or whatever inspires them. I know a lot of the girls, they do a Bollywood with belly dance
mm-hmm.
fusion mix.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very inspiring and beautiful to watch. That'll be in the second show as well. And then we do have a surprise, amazing talent that's going to be joining us for the unveiling. He's called The Light Marcher. Google him. A good friend of mine produces this amazing act that Hawaii has not seen too much, so it's very special. And The Light Marcher is going to be doing something totally, totally outside the box as well. Don't be scared.
That's why the second show is 18 and over.
The second show is 18 and over, yes. Yes.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So
discerning adults.
Mm-hmm. Are you getting much outreach from the TV stations or the newspaper?
Usually,
coverage?
Every year we do a thing with KHON. We haven't booked that currently, but we are looking forward to doing that. I know, Cutmaster Spaz always supports and do something for us as well. But we are trying to get as much exposure as we can for this art and culture and this event that we're so, so proud of.
Mm-hmm.
All information on the website, Hawaii Belly Dance Convention. Or you can find us on Facebook. We have a page, Hawaii Belly Dance Convention, as well.
Your Facebook is...
Mm-hmm. We have a Facebook page with all the information and updates constantly. You can also reach out to us, email us, call us with any questions or concerns.
Mm-hmm.
It's a five-day event, so let me just give you a quick little schedule overview. Friday is the two big shows at the Museum of Arts, at the Dorstuk Theater. Saturday and Sunday is seminars and lectures all day long at the Neil Blaisdell Hawaii Suites, which is right next to the ticket booth.
Mm-hmm.
And during the seminars, we have shopping galore with the Middle Eastern marketplace, from costumes to handmade jewelry, to customized perfumes, to massage therapists, henna artists. You can get a souvenir Hawaii Belly Dance Convention tank top, all kinds of good jewelry and workout clothes,
mm-hmm.
just unlimited amount of goodies that you can't find anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a free event. You can come and shop and just check out what we got going on Saturday and Sunday at the Neil Blaisdell. Then Monday is probably my most favorite day. It's the Belly Dancers Gone Bad Catamaran Cruise. We take all our visitors out for a catamaran sail around Waikiki, around Diamond Head. And then Tuesday, we do a hiking and Hawaiian lunch, ended with some amazing shaved ice. A lot of the visitors come, and they want to experience the local. And this is what we do. And then I missed something.
Yep.
I missed something. The night
Sunday.
Owls. Go ahead, Gina.
On Sunday is the after party at 1144
mm-hmm.
on 1144 Bethel Street, right close to the Hawaii Theater, and that's where everybody can really get to mingle with all the celebrity performers and the teachers and
mm-hmm.
each other, and just kind of let their hair down and dance and watch some more performances.
Amazing talent.
And also
9 p.m. to 12
a.m. to really get in there and talk to the performers one-on-one.
Mm-hmm.
They're all very humble. They're all very approachable. And that's the other thing I like about this, is that all the performers are so down-to-earth. They admire each other so much. I call them celebrities. They don't call themselves that. That's
right.
Just my personal thing.
Right.
Because I want people to recognize that, you know, that they are. Those are my kind of celebrities.
Yeah.
The people that I can touch and the people that have such influence, you know, not so much the people
that are real human beings that will talk to you and ask you
absolutely.
About your day and ask for your opinions on what they taught or how their performance. And we hang out, and the meet and greet is really, really awesome.
Absolutely.
And that's Sunday.
Mm-hmm.
Sunday night, the 12th,
yeah.
at the 1144 on Bethel Street. This is from 9 p.m. to 12 a.m.
Wow.
And that's really fun.
I forgot that. And it's going to be hosted by DJ Telefero.
Telefero is amazing. He's probably Hawaii's most top MC for weddings and events. and he's a great DJ and a master of ceremonies, and he's going to be hosting the event. So you'll hear some of the most amazing dance music, and you get to mingle with the artists of the event. You get to talk to Frank Farinaro. I mean, how amazing is that? You see him kill it on stage. He's such a great teacher as well. Yeah. And then we get to hang out and have a cocktail with him and talk story.
So is there anybody going to be making a good baklava?
Good baklava.
Yeah.
That would be at Kenzaman.
Kenzaman has got the really good baklava. That's on Nuanu.
Is going to be, well, that day.
Well, we'll have Indian cuisine and vegan cuisine at the shows. Maybe we'll bring some baklava to the after party if you come, Carol.
Yeah, if you're there,
we'll pick you up
sure you
or we'll make you some. You know who makes really good baklava? Adley Mirza, our Arabic singer. He makes the best homemade baklava. After the show.
One of the best small gatherings of belly dancers, and there were other Arabic dancing and Mediterranean, and was at the L.A. Community College when I first signed in. That man, I never knew anything. You know, I'm from Mississippi. It's Black Eyed Peas, the Bible, and go to school and go to work. You know. And when I got out of the Army and signed up to go to L.A. Community College, and it was, wow, look at all of this art every day.
Mm-hmm.
Even in weekdays, there was something, a play or something. And, and I didn't know what I was missing until I saw that, you know. Yeah. It's just going to the Lancashire over there at the theater there, the, you know, Hollywood Bowl and seeing things, it's like a culture, you know, sharing it
mind
and building.
Mind expanding. Isn't
it? And no matter how you look at it, it makes for a better person.
So inspiring,
and better,
yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And from that, you know, A Warm Summer Night's Dream being the play, and, you know, just on and on and on and on and on. For those of you that are wondering, what are we doing sitting here talking about belly dancing? No, it isn't about the pretty girls. There's a lot more, because coming to convening on this is many, many people who have their talents, but the product of this is going to be, I say tolerance. Because if you know something about someone or their culture, begin to appreciate them, and then you respect them. That's me.
I agree with that assessment.
So much for my Gandhi-ish moment.
I think that's a wonderful thing to say. I have a girlfriend of mine. She's Lebanese, and she would describe for me how she learned how to belly dance.
Mm-hmm.
And within the culture, it's basically from a child. The mom will wrap a dish towel around their hips and say, shake it for your supper type thing. And that's how they learn. And it's no different than how in the South or in the North or out West, how we did things when I was a kid in California. We'd sing for our parents.
Yeah.
Or we'd put a little performance on or something and dance for our parents. Or, you know, they'd say, okay, I'll give you a quarter, sing that song you learned in church, that type of thing. So it's no different.
Right.
And when you recognize that, it's like, wow, that's kind of like what my parents did.
Mm-hmm.
It was just a different vehicle.
Yeah. Yes. But so many tricks you need to motivate a child and their, you know,
exactly.
or at your disposal.
Exactly.
They're all, whether here or there, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But so what is the, again, the event is, this is Malia de la Pena, and we're talking about the Belly Dance Convention.
The Hawaii Belly Dance Convention. It's our 10th annual event here in Honolulu, Hawaii. 5-day event, Friday through Tuesday, October 10th through 14th. All information is on the website, HawaiiBellyDanceConvention.com, or on our Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
5 days filled with fun. And dance.
Mm-hmm. And aloha.
And lots and lots of aloha.
There's a few girls coming from Seattle that were here last year. And it's like they're our sisters now. You know, they're across to Seattle. But they're just like part of our Hawaii community now.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Over the whole year, since last year, we've been seeing them on Facebook. And
keeping in touch.
Malia got to go, and she did her West Coast tour. So she like the other teacher, she's a celebrity performer, too, even though she doesn't.
So you travel and give shows and perform?
Yes, sir. I live, too.
She hides her light under a bushel too much, so that's why I just wanted to hide the, or pull
so
the bushel back.
Right.
So you know that she tours. She does an East Coast tour one year, and then she does a West Coast tour, and she travels as well. And she's the celebrity performer at these other events as well. So she's got a following on the mainland, mm-hmm. and a lot of people don't know that. So we have a jewel in our midst, and
aww,
I just
so
wanted
sweet.
To make sure everybody mm-hmm. knew that.
You're mm-hmm. so sweet, my love. Thank you, Gina Snowden. You're so sweet.
Yeah.
I live to share this. I live. Yeah. I live to do it. It's everything. It's my everything. It's my air. It's my water. It's my passion. Mm-hmm. I kind of call it my wedding to the arts. Every year we produce this event, and it's like producing a five-day wedding to
yeah.
the arts.
It's
but we're just so blessed to have the support of Hawaii and the community and all mm-hmm. the other performers that we get to collaborate with this year. Without their support, we wouldn't have this amazing event and all the visitors that come into town that, you know, that want to come to visit Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
We're just very, very blessed. Because without their support, we would have nothing.
Yeah, I mean, if I came to Hawaii as a tourist, I don't think I could lay on the beach for 5 days. Well, I wouldn't have any reason to. I already have a suntan.
I'm with you.
I need a tan.
Yeah, it'd be overdone. But, so I would want to go and see some art or dance or something or show that's taken me out of the norm. You know,
yes,
and,
get some cultural awareness
mm-hmm.
here in Honolulu.
Yeah. And I'd like to remember, now that Malia is performing at she has a show at the Doris Duke, I think it's amazing because Doris Duke, the lover of all
yes.
things Middle Eastern.
Middle Eastern.
Yeah.
I think she would, I think she's really happy that this is happening at the Doris Duke.
Aww.
And
yeah.
That's true. I didn't think about that.
I always
yeah.
think about that. You
that's
know, I
so
just
awesome.
Think, wow, you know, that lady years and years, all those decades ago, she put something out there. And even though it came about in a different way, now it's being manifested
mm-hmm.
in her place named after her. So mm-hmm. I just always think that's kind of
that's
neat,
so awesome.
You know, that people brought to Hawaii such
mm-hmm.
an amazing culture.
Well,
we're very blessed.
If they email me that picture, and I'm going to post it up and show them what dance will do for you. And I'm in the middle, and you'll know who belly dance and who does not.
You look like a belly dancer, Carol.
Well, Noah said he learned from
Alexandria, yes.
Egypt. So.
Yes.
You know, it is for men as well.
Yep.
You know,
yes.
like hula was men participated and they
yes.
still do. So,
yes.
You know, and men do break dance or whatever.
Mm-hmm,
so
mm-hmm. We have the male belly dancer coming and teaching and performing as well. Frank Farinaro.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Frank Farinaro.
Yep.
Okay. Well, give a plug for that for the show and give a rundown on the times again. I know some out there probably think this is a commercial. No, it's not.
I sound like a commercial.
But please do sound like a commercial because there are some will get it and some, you know, maybe the next week I'll have one on spam carving and then we'll get the phone ring off the hook. So, I don't know.
Thank you so much for your support, Carol.
It's unpredictable, you know.
You're so awesome.
So go ahead and...
So Friday, October 10th is our 10th annual Hawaii Belly Dance Convention, starting with the Shimmy Showcase, a two-feature. 6 o'clock is mm-hmm. the Essence, traditional Middle Eastern and folklore. 8 p.m. is the Unveiling, the Exploration of Sensual Intoxication. All tickets are available online. There's a few left. It will sell out like it does every year at DorisDukeTheater.com. Or for all and every piece of information concerning the five-day event, you can visit the website HawaiiBellyDanceConvention.com or look for us on Facebook. Just Google Hawaii Belly Dance Convention. You'll find us in all our crazy photos.
Mm-hmm. And again, and just to be respectful of the some of your supporters in this,
mm-hmm.
some of the groups and individuals.
Can I give some shout outs?
Yeah.
Oh, we'd love to.
This is, yeah. If they don't be known, they won't eat and they won't perform.
That's right.
It's simple.
Oh, there's so many partners and collaboration. DJ Native Girl, India Cafe, Green and Vines, Pretty Peacock Productions, The Aphrodisiacs, Shakti Dance Movement and Kalai Kaina, Garden Nile Belly Dance, Miko Rise, Tara Severns. I can do this all day. Can you help me, Gina?
DJ Telefaro.
Telefaro. Mm-hmm.
Yes, Michelle Carbonell with her massage.
Yes.
And we have Indigo Elixirs
yes.
As a vendor.
Mm-hmm. Ha'olehena.
Shimmy Chic.
Yes.
selling a lot of belly dance attire for years and years here on the island, and a 10-year supporter of the belly dance convention from the beginning. Let's see who else.
We do this all day. Mabzi from Cherry Blossom Cabaret. Oh, the Doors to Theater, their whole crew. They're so helpful.
Oh,
the,
yeah,
Blaisdell. The Blaisdell's an amazing, helpful crew. The 1144. Manukai Catamaran Cruise. Captain Rebe Photography. Olelo is going to be filming and capturing the events again this year.
Really?
Yes. Olelo is a very great supporter.
Miss India,
Angela Nand, she's going to be at the event as well, doing interview and taking photos with all the guests. Yes, Miss India.
So, some of you might be out curious listening to this, and you might, why am I sitting here letting you rattle on with the names and all? Here's why. Because if I believe, I would be impressed if I learned this number of people from so many variety of people that have expressed an interest, that this is an okay event. This is something that...
This is legit.
Not just that, but I mean, if that many people are willing to participate and support it, then that suggests that we, too, sitting at home, should learn to listen and participate and support, because, you know, it's not government-sponsored.
It's so sweet.
A private endeavor.
Yes.
And I would say thank you.
Thank you,
Carol. It's art. However one might describe it, I just believe, I know that when I learn to appreciate other people and their culture, I've gotten one step better at being a better human being myself. Forget the rest of the world, but just for me, you know. So thank you.
Anything in closing? We're just so thankful for the support of the community and everyone coming to the event, the Hawaii Belly Dance Convention. We're just so, so thankful, and I'm very, very blessed to have these amazing friends in the world. And thank you, Magina Snowden, for being such an amazing assistant producer.
And thank you, Mr. Carroll. This is amazing.
Good morning,
Carroll.
Thank you so much for having us.
Anytime. I appreciate it.
We love being here.
And thank you for your insight on culture and tolerance. Yeah. I really appreciate that.
Ooh, that's Natasha Atlas right there.
I know. I
makes
was,
me want to dance.
I'm
you ready,
sorry.
Gina?
I just want to surprise you.
He's so smart.
Okay, thank you for joining me on the Carol Cox Show. I want to thank my guests, Malia de la Pena and Tina Snowden. And again, talking about the belly dance convention here. Friday, October 10th is going to be the Shimmy Showcase and starts at 6 o'clock. But anyway, HawaiiBellyDanceConvention.com is a website. And thanks for joining in. And we'll see you next week. Lots to talk about, and but I just thought I'd put everything in the bump and grind on the back burner and take a break and spare us all from the what's not working in the state government and what have you. And we'll talk about it. So see you next week. Aloha.
This has been the Carol Cox Show, heard every Sundays at 9 a.m. on K108. Tune in again next week, Sunday at 9 a.m. to the Carol Cox Show on 1080 a.m. KWAI.